dug out an old poem. It's an old Irish poem. The reason I've done this, I've applied for Irish citizenship, if you'll have me. So this brings to mind all the reasons why I love Ireland. And this is why I wore green. Because you've got to colour coordinate your poems. Rita the Bowron. I hear your hands, a benediction of skin to skin, a mantra of ancient bone, rising above celestial scars and swan songs of Lear. I hear your hands beneath the solstice, acoustics ascending from wings of sorrow, as Tara's breath exhales, lifting her emerald veil, meadow sweet and white thorn woven to crown the halos of pilgrims. In the distance, shadows awaken and dance with eyes that speak of legends. Drifting in the half light of an eclipse, time falls like snow on sleeve Luokra. Cold flesh bound in sacred stone, as Daniel's limbs coil around the limbs of the immortal. I hear your hands in the heartbeat of ravens, echoing in the womb of the holy well, and the gentle whispers of the wind that cradle a lament. I imagine laughter, binding the wounds of heroes, turning blood into petals of scarlet flax, as if fragility becomes fertile. On the street of the stone ring fort, I see streams of colour in the blind piper's eyes. Through each scarred hue, a solitary reed softly sings. Behind, a damselfly opens its wings to catch the colour, before it too bows its head in prayer. I hear your hands as they slip between Atlantic blue, each wave knowing its birth. In time and out of time, the restless salt breeze flies with wild geese. Somewhere in the rhythm of soft rain, each drop remembers. I hear your hands in the flute song of the egret, as Erin kneels before the ephemeral, the sanctuary of the known and the unknown, her mossy gown unfolding half-forgotten myths. I hear your hands, a heartbeat, on an incandescent moon of skin, a rhythm in the wintered hands of a scythe, in the footfall of red deer, and in the light of the eternal. And as I watch Celtic mist rise above ancient stone, I feel both a longing and a belonging to this land, this people, these words that linger as a mantra in the warmth of solace beneath the silent boundary of my skin.
If only you had to write a poem to get Irish citizenship. That'd be absolutely... That would definitely get it anyway. Thank you so much. Okay, Rosie, next please.
I'm going to read two poems. They're pretty short. The first one is, it's called Memorial to Brian Lee Fields Cork, and some of you may be familiar if you walk on the Lee Fields with a wooden carving, which was, it's dedicated to a man who died in the river, and it was made by his brother. I think it's one of the most beautiful things of Cork City, actually. So this is just a poem that was inspired by it and to it. And as I said, it's called Memorial to Brian Lee Fields Cork. A brother's carving, woods cut, creased, planed, waxed, inscribed with loss, and lingering for a river that took his time. Laid back always, laid back still, garlanded with city growth, yarrow, dandelion. Bindweed spread, talisman for creatures spooled in along the banks. Dogs unleashed, foxes reeling, wanderers, waderers, outdoor types. Fisher boys tap and touch. His form brings look, we'd like to think. Our wooden man, your brother, minder, reminder, remembered well. Memento mori to these others, with rods always dipping down in the lee strait. And the second one then is, it's about a crow who I think I might have said who might be dead by now. He used to visit my aunt to be fed every day, and it's called Scrap Tapper. Bedraggled crow, scrap tapping at my aunt's window, cat winged and feather fucked, the mundane is a battering. But we're made airborne on a prospect, promises fulfilled between step and sill, crusts and peels a steady supplement, where garnish is a woman's care. Oh.
Thank you very much. Can we ask Sandra next, please?
Thank you. I'm continuing to enjoy my time in Cork, and tonight's reading is wonderful. I was telling Terry that my most recent book is dedicated to my husband, but the poems in it are not really about him. Most of them are about the bad relationships I had to go through to get to him. So he's like the finish line, and I put him up front. But this is from the book I'm working on now, and it is very much about marriage. It starts off with a couple of lines quoted from Chaucer, a kind of challenge put forward in Chaucer that still exists as a folk myth today. It's called The Vow. But never for us the flitch of bacon, though, that some may win in Essex at Dunmo. So promises the old wives' tale, a covenant according to Chaucer, that if tomorrow I trek to Dunmo Church and swear before God and congregation not a fight, no single quarrel, in 366 days, not even once wishing to be unmarried to you, that salted hog is ours for the taking. My love, what a limp victory that would be. Sweet silence of perfect agreement as we swing a pork trophy between us, walking the many miles home, the fat back won, the battle lost. I reserve my right to a good spat, to the meat's spit in flame. I take joy in choosing you again and again.
Nice poem. Choosing you again and again. Can we have Seamus next, please? Thanks, Shelley. John spoke about Norway and one, so I dug this out from the cobwebs because of that. And we toured up the west coast of Norway, across into Finland. On the way back down, I came to the most amazing place, and Santitals has since discovered it. It's called Rovaniemi, and this is called Rovaniemi 72. 66 degrees 30 north, 25 degrees 44 east. Oversized, customized, slouch down street cars, transnational plates, lumberjack the lads, low profer alloys, hard men, soft tops, flatbed pickups, big bore chrome pipes, flat black park. Check it out, baby. Sonorous Harleys parade down the avenue, past good time seekers and onerous logs rafted up across the Silver River. Supercharged growlers, wide wheel arch strip, dragster wannabes, bystanders giggle at new wealth, old sport, copious tongues, just one body language. Newsflash, reindeer parked, Alaskan ice cream and short supply. Gazers and gazebos, backpack hikers, I heard it through the grapevine. Lone prospectors, window shopping ladies, long haul tourists, Norway vote no.
crawl around the Moat Town one more time, lap it all up. Come on, let's party. Sundown is not for 2 months yet.
Thanks so much, Seamus. Can we join you next week?
We've read this before, but it's been a while, yeah. So it would be grand. I haven't been here since the day I got my diagnosis. I suppose it's because I'm over where I was, by head and shoulders. This old fortress made of broken stone fills me with a closeness to the lonely little kid who couldn't see beyond his nose. His cause was hopeless, so he'd go away to be alone, and he'd transposed his cluttered, stuttered thoughts and his emotions to the pad whereon he wrote them. And to put him in the zone, he would write them in a flow using the beats on his phone. Not so much a poet, like a purist would use the word, more like Watsky or Shinoda, but to him the distinction blurred. Because hip-hop was a music genre, and rap is style of vocals, and how could it be either when the verse was never heard? So this is where our battered young man's battle starts in earnest. Blessed or cursed with a brain that dealt with pain by getting further from the hurt, and trying not to unearth it, which would be fine if I'd known the kind of mind I had to work with. So while the earth shook and the world took to driving in reverse, I found this old dirt nook where I could write my words with each verse in the workbook, tried to understand the purpose of the madness and the sadness that I had to hand. And so I made my stand, the fort had to be manned, and in its walls I had what my mentality demanded. This castle was my land, the world outside be damned, magic language sat at my command.
I find that poem so relatable, Jamie. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. Can we have Lisa next, please?
So I have a couple of tiny things. I've been trying to write like haiku-like poems. I'm ranting about the sun, and this will be the first one. What wouldn't we do for one more inch of warmth at any time? And on a different topic, this is for when you see your ex with someone else. So I'm so happy for you too. I say, I'm so happy she's happier than me.
Very good. Okay, Patricia next, please. Patricia Walsh.
And generally pisses people off. It's called Season of the Bitch. Some people that do no wrong, the token queen garnering X division, for this reason, he's got it, as an archaeologist. The four certain doctrine is his learned fate. Squirmed into good books for good or ill, grind societies into the ground, that's all fit. Popular contests seize the good time saber. Not to worry, surreptitious conspiracy as is. Laughing at my own business, meekly told, he can't comprehend this on his watch. Portable films recount the great times, had by all, exclusion or one state. My love about the company, in part seeming, common culture drafted to join the club. Not bowing to opinion on any given stance, respected, still loved, esteemed over order. Empty has its price, I was in my case. Seeking details that can forever censure it readily. Hypocritical alcoholic endeavor rings false. Boasts and misgivings populate the conversation. Not in the business anymore, resignation worth giving. Broken back on weight and matchsticks. The next best thing weighed on propriety. Popular comments aching to be foretold. Thank you.
Our next poet, he told me his name is George, but I know very well his name is Rab. Rab.
For from an occasional series called My Girlfriend Keeps Wanting Me to Write New Poems, I've been writing songs. This is song three. Underneath the trees, a warm wind tarries, keeping the chill of winter at bay. Come crashing through the branches, a body shatters, we scatter, here was hell. Firing pebbles with my catapult, I repeatedly struck the old church bell. The fog's tone of stone or brass, waking the streets and bringing the people to stare and mourn and gather, to bundle, shoulder and carry, and to lay down her body on the cold headstone. The art of the poisoner hasn't gone away. We're fed a little more venom every day. It's hard to be happy here. This place is full of pain and fear. But hold on, stay kind, and be kind to yourself. The morning mist, dispersing slowly, reveals a body swinging in the breeze. The people gather with hook and ladder to harvest strange fruit from strange fruit trees. The art of the poisoner hasn't gone away. We're fed a little more venom every day. It's hard to be happy here. This place is full of pain and fear. But hold on. Be kind. Stay kind. And be kind to yourself.
Awesome imagery in that round. Thank you so much. Can we have Max Peter next?
Okay, so just so because it reminded me of being in a moment, oh, so strong, about Tom Walker. And just so I tried to describe it, you know, I was trying to write, I always write something and do it to the mic to challenge myself. But it's and there's nothing like the berry holly glistening neath the moon. And we drive home by Shorten's, Danny Fick would pay the spoons. And after, we went into Sean Reardon's house, and I could smell the yule log crackling with the crackling of the straw on his socks and the tick of the clock. And after, we would sleep out, myself and Lad. And it was me and him, the hand in the pocket and the frosty walk home. After a grand night, and we'd had a feed of Bastwell bread and homemade butter. We'd watched Sean plait his mother's hair, his silver long hair, and put her to bed. It was two big farmer's hands. And we were going home, myself and Daddy, and I said to Dad, I put the hand in the pocket always, because it was cold and frosty, and I said, Daddy, why is there a ring around the moon always? He said, sure, that's the bullseye for the Sputnik, for the Sputnik to find a way to the moon. Mm. And you see that star down there, Max. And Margaret. So, yeah, that's the star of Curragh. That's the southern star. But the one west over there, along to the Venus and all, that's the star that carried Grand and Queen all the way to America to the Copper Kings. And he did his work there. And then I remember when we came home, we opened the Christmas box. And all this happened one evening. And the Christmas box had come from my two brothers that had gone to America from when I was two. And there were two priests at the time. And we opened up the box, and out came my books. And the books were Tommy Unger, and I still because the heroes and villains, the heroes were the villains, the rats, and the lizards and things. And I many years later, I saw the first black ink drawings, etchings, and they were always drawn so bizarrely and so strikingly. And I loved my Tommy Unger books. They were really weird books to give it to, but my brother sent them to me. They're very discerning. And all the years later, I went to the Finch Film Festival, and there was a Tommy Unger, same guy, but he'd done a whole animated film called Moon Man. And it was like the books I'd read about the little girl looking out of the moon, and this girl had come to womanhood, and now she was in love with the man. So I wrote my little song coming out the door, and I met Tommy Unger. I said, I wrote a song for you. I said, oh, really? Lovely. Hi. Thank you. But I did have a few words with him, and I drew him. And one day, this is a very simple song, And please forgive me because my voice is just about enough to sing tonight because I'm sick. And I'll try and do it backhanded. So I'll shut up now and do what I want. All of that is because of your memories. So.
There's a man on the moon. And he sees in my room. He's giving me the eye. Wherever I go, he's watching right through. He's so smooth and he's shy. No need to explain, I'm hard to attain. There's a whole world between us. Your light cheers away, another planet I'd say. You're Mars and I'm Venus. To my heart, what she see in me.
It's different.
What she see in me. Half moon or full, my gravity pulls, and she's a little tease. No need to flirt, I'm just moon rock and dust. You're wasting your chances. My heart is a crater, no gravity either, some trip little dancer. Moon man, why can't we plan to hold hands and take a little walk to hide?
Come on, Rabbi.
Moon man, why can't we plan?
Show me those surrealist pieces, man. I love to see those comic strips, books you're talking about.
I will.
Thank you. Can we have Terry Dole next, please?
So it's a short poem for someone leaving and for someone coming into this world. Euston, we are leaving now for Tony Hoagland. Only two moon phases since you were bathed in that cancer-killing creme de menthe mocktail, raised upright in your oncology bed, impossibly irradiant with your sickle cell transfer, the power of positive thinking eclipsed by the sun while tongued by the dead. Suddenly you were transferred, your application for release into our arms, £8.10, to neonatal tests, tagging, documentation, and further examinations. On the 12th day, you came home, loaned from the Genesis Library, the oldest spectrum of light, blue, binding in your eyes. In the tree outside, a gift charm chimes. In its tell, I hear your cries, the sweetest time.
This is from about 50 years ago, when I was first dabbling with trying to write poetry, and this is certainly not a poem, but it's a verse. Multimedia musical happening, 1968. Vietnam blues. So I won't go into all the details about the music of its newsreels and stuff like that. But, it's some people would call it polemical verse. I see it more as journalistic verse. There's four points of view here. First is a spokesperson for the American government. A lot of folk don't know what we're trying to do. The complexities of modern war just aren't getting through. The reason we're bombing Hanoi and Haiphong is to break the Red Menace. Don't get us wrong. If hospitals get hit, that's a tragic mistake. It's the infrastructure we're trying to break. How come we're there? We got a commitment, that's how. We can't chicken out of Vietnam now. We got too many dominoes in the South Asia section, and whatever they say, they need our protection. Mao has his eyes on that rice in the Mekong bowl. We China watchers know that's not his final goal. The Saigon's crew is not perfect, but why make such a fuss? They're sure anti-red, that's what matters to us. The second point of view then is a Viet Cong fighter, a woman, black clothes, AK-47, and a bicycle. Red and before, Vietnam is proud of its history. We long fought the Chinese to keep our country free. Bloody war has raged for 25 years with Japan, then the French, then the Saigon racketeers. Now their masters have come from far across the sea, and they think their air power will bring us to our knees. But we have a firm cause and a way of life at stake. Their bombs and their napalm, our spirits will not break. We appeal to all people who suffered airstrike. May the Yankee civilian never know the like. People of Hiroshima, Dresden, Coventry, all we're asking for is your sympathy. Hanoi may be flattened by bombers one day. World opinion fly a kite, hear Washington say. But Uncle Ho will help the Viet Cong Marquis, until all of Vietnam will one day be free. Third point of view then is, a liberal point of view. It's hard to decide for someone like me. It's a horrible war and I just can't agree. America's got it wrong about Southeast Asia. The carpet bombing is a callous measure. But you Viet Cong, you're partly to blame, red dictatorship your ultimate aim. How can you say Vietnam will be free? You will bring vengeance and chaos and misery. You don't hesitate now to kill the hill peasants if they seem to accept the Yankee presence. Should you come to power, it is far from certain atrocities won't happen behind the bamboo curtain. If you've the common good at heart, as you say, think of the suffering, cast ideology away. Persuade the Americans to the conference table for a neutral system, progressive and stable. And finally, the fourth one is, the Americans who are protesting. Hey, hear me talking, Mr. LBJ, how many kids did you kill today? That's what the Dylan generation is saying it louder every damn day, and that White House cowboy don't want to listen. Says us peaceniks got a screw or two missing. Now we blacks too, we've been thinking about it. Do you hear us starting to shout it? Okay is a hard killer, at home not worth a damn. That's the way you want it, forget it, Uncle Sam. Mr. President, it's no, we're having no more of fighting fellow colors in your dirty, stinking war. For the war we gotta fight, we don't needn't go far. We're gonna do our fighting right here where we are. If we die in LA, Washington, New York, Honky will take you with us, and that's no idle talk. Who knows, Mr. Johnson, the summer or before, maybe another Vietnam at your own back door.
Final poet for tonight is Jim Crocker. Excuse me. So this little prompt of a poem is by Anne Sexton, and it's called The Fury of Cocks. Not to be confused with roosters. There's a four-letter word in it beginning with F, and like
whenever she was writing it, her husband was like, writing that is beneath you. And she was like, I thought it was above me. So the fury of cocks. There they are, drooping over the breakfast plates, angel-like, folding in their sad wing, animal sad. And only the night before, there they were, playing the banjo. Once more the daylight comes, with its immense sun, its mother trucks, its engines of amputation, whereas last night, the cock knew its way home. As stiff as a hammer, battering in with all its awful power, that theatre. Today it is tender as a small bird, as soft as a baby's hand. She is the house, he is the steeple. When they fuck, they are God. When they break away, they are God. When they snore, they are God. In the morning, they butter the toast. They don't say much. They are still God. All the cocks of the world are God, blooming, blooming, blooming into the sweet blood of woman.
So that's it, guys. That's the 595 O'Reilly.
Oh,
yeah, it's actually a nice round number. Thank you so much for coming. Okay, one more round of applause for John Church.